And these pulled themselves about and stood to face the Achaeans, the Greeks, while the Argives held in their close order and would not be broken. As when along the hallowed threshing floors, here we have a Homeric simile, as when along the hallowed threshing floors the wind scatters chaff among men winnowing, line 500, and fair-haired Demeter in the leaning wind discriminates the chaff and the true grain, and the piling chaff whitens beneath it. All right, just like when they are winnowing and they throw the wheat up and the wind blows away the chaff. It isn't really the wind. It's actually fair-haired Demeter, goddess of the grain. Just like that. So now the Achaeans turned white underneath the dust. The feet of the horses drove far into the brazen sky across their faces as they rapidly closed and the charioteers wheeled back again. 9505. They drove the strength of their hands straight on, as violent Ares, defending the Trojans, mantled in dark night, the battle and passed everywhere, since he was carrying out the commandments of Phoebus Apollo, him of the golden sword, who had bidden him wake the heart in the Trojans as he saw that Pallas Athena was gone away now, she who stood to defend the Danaans. And out of the rich secret chamber Apollo sent forth Aeneas, and dropped strength in the heart of the people's shepherd. So Aeneas stood among his friends, who were happy as they saw him coming back, still alive and unwounded and full of brave spirit. Yet they asked him no question, for the rest of their fighting work would not let them. They're too busy. That the silver bow god woke, and man-slaughtering Ares, and hate whose wrath is relentless. Now the two Iontes, Ajax and lesser Ajax, and Odysseus and Diomedes, line 520, stirred the Danaans to fight these, since themselves they did not fear the force of the men of Troy, nor their charges onward, but stayed where they were like clouds, which the son of Cronus stops in the windless weather on the heights of the towering mountains, motionless when the strength of the north wind sleeps, and the other tearing winds, those winds that when they blow into tempests, high screaming descend upon the darkening clouds and scatter them. So the Danaans stood steady against the Trojans, nor gave way, and Atreus' son raged through the masses with his many orders. Be men now, dear friends, and take up the heart of courage, and have consideration for each other in the strong encounters, since more come through alive when men consider each other, and there is no glory, no chaos, when they give way, nor warcraft either. He spoke and made a swift cast with his spear, and struck down a great man, Deucaeon, companion of high-hearted Aeneas. Pergasus' son, whom the Trojans honored as they honored Priam's children, since he was a swift man to fight in the foremost. Powerful Agamemnon struck his shield with spear, nor could the shield hold off the spear, but the bronze smashed clean through and was driven on through the belt to the deep of the belly. Line 540. He fell thunderously, and his armor clattered upon him. Now Aeneas killed two great men of the Danaans, the sons of Diocles, Orsilochus and Crethon, men whose father dwelt in Fear the strong founded, rich in substance, and his generation was of the river Alpheus, who flows wide through the country of the Pelians, and who got a son, Ortilochus, to be lord over many men. But the son of Ortilochus was high-hearted Diocles, and to Diocles in his turn were two twin sons born, Orsilochus and Crethon, both well skilled in all fighting. These two, as they were grown to young manhood, line 550, followed along with the Argives in their black ships to Ilion, land of good horses, a winning honor for the sons of Atreus, Agamemnon, and Menelaus. Now fulfillment of death was a darkness upon them. These, as, and now we have another simile, as two young lions in the high places of the mountains had been raised by their mother in the dark of the deep forest, lions which, as they prey upon the cattle and the fat sheep, lay waste the steadings where there are men, until they also fall and are killed under the cutting bronze in the men's hands, such were these two, who, beaten under the hands of Aeneas, crashed now to the ground as if they were two tall pine trees. Line 560. As these fell, warlike Menelaus took pity on them, and he strode out among the champions, helmed in bright bronze, shaking his spear, and the fury of Ares drove him onward, minded that he might go down under the hands of Aeneas. But Antilochus, son of high-hearted Nestor, watched him, and he strode among the champions in fear for the shepherd of the people, lest he be hurt and all their labor slip away into nothing. So as Aeneas and Menelaus raised hand and sharp spear, standing to face each other, and furious to do battle, Antilochus took his stand close beside the shepherd of the people. 9570. Nor did Aeneas hold his ground, though yet a swift fighter, as he saw two men staying with each other against him. These, when they had dragged back the bodies among the Achaean people, dropped the poor youths into the hands of their company, and themselves wheeled about once more to fight among the foremost. 5-7-5. There these killed Pylaemenes, the equal of Ares, lord of the Paphlagonian men in armor, high-hearted. Menelaus, the spear-famed son of Atreus, stabbed him with the spear as he stood his ground and struck the collarbone, while Antilochus struck down Medon, his charioteer and henchman, Antimenius's brave son, as he wheeled the single-foot horses about, with a stone striking mid-elbow, and from his hands the reins, pale with ivory, dropped in the dust groundling. Antilochus, charging, drove the sword into his temple, so that gasping he dropped from the carefully wrought chariot, 585, headlong, driven deep in the dust, his neck and shoulders, and there, since he chanced to light in a depth of sand, he stuck fast, while his horses trampled him into the dust with their feet. These Antilochus lashed and drove back into the host of the Achaeans, so they got his horses too. 590. Hector saw them across the ranks and drove on against them, crying aloud, and with him followed the Trojan battalions in their strength. And Ares led them with the goddess Enyo, she carrying with her the turmoil of shameless hatred, while Ares made play in his hands with the spear gigantic, and ranged now in front of Hector and now behind him. Diomedes of the great war cry shivered as he saw him. And like a man in his helplessness who, crossing a great plain, stands at the edge of a fast-running river that dashes seaward and watches it thundering into white water and leaps apace backward, so now Tydeus' son gave back and spoke to his people. Friends, although we know the wonder of glorious Hector to be a fighter with the spear and a bold man of battle, yet there goes ever some god beside him who beats off destruction, and now, in the likeness of a man mortal, Ares goes with him. 605. Come then, keeping your faces turned to the Trojans, give a round backward, nor be we eager to fight in strength with divinities. So Diomedes says to his trips, we're not running away, keep your face toward the Trojans, but let's don't fight the gods. Don't fight the gods. He spoke, and now the Trojans had come very close upon them. There Hector cut down two men, well skilled in warcraft, and Achelous and Menestheus, both in a single chariot. As these fell, great Telamonian Aias pitied them, and stood close in and made a cast with the shining javelin, and struck Amphius, Selagus's son, who, rich in possessions and rich in cornland, had lived in Paphos, but his own destiny brought him companion in arms to Priam and the children of Priam. 615. Now Telamonian Aias struck him beneath the war belt, and the far-shadowing spear was fixed in the lower belly, and he fell thunderously, and shining Aias, Ajax, ran forward to strip his armor. But the Trojans showered spears upon him, sharp spears and glittering, and the great shield caught many. Setting his heel on the chest of the corpse, he pulled out the brazen spear, yet could no longer strip the rest of the glorious armor from his shoulders, since he was battered with spears thrown, and he dreaded the strong circle made by the haughty Trojans, who many and valiant stood over him, gripping their great spears, and though he was a mighty man, and a strong and a proud one, thrust him away from them, so that he gave ground back, staggering. So they went at their work, all about the strong encounter. But Heracles' son, Tlepolemus, the huge and mighty, was driven by his strong destiny against godlike Sarpedon. Now, as these in their advance had come close together, the own son and the son's son of Zeus cloud-gathering, it was Tlepolemus of the two who spoke the first word. And now you have to realize, who's the father of Sarpedon? This is Zeus's son Sarpedon and Zeus's grandson Tlepolemus facing off with one another. Line 6-3-3. Man of counsel of the Lycians, Sarpedon, why must you be skulking here, you who are a man unskilled in the fighting? They're liars who call you issue of Zeus, the holder of the Aegis, since you fall far short in truth of the others who were begotten of Zeus in the generation before us. Such men as they say was the great strength of Heracles, my own father of the daring spirit, the heart of a lion. He came here on a time for the sake of Laomedon's horses, with 6 vessels only, and the few men needed to man them, and widowed the streets of Ilion and sacked the city. So here we have one saying to the other, my Tlepolemus says, my father Heracles was greater than your father, who wasn't really Zeus after all. But yours is the heart of a coward, and your people are dying. And I think that now, though you are come from Lycia, you will bring no help to the Trojans, even though you be a strong man. Line 6-4-5. But beaten down by my hands, will pass through the gates of Hades. In turn, the lord of the Lycians, Sarpedon, answered him, in truth, Tlepolemus, he did destroy Ilion, Troy, the sacred, through the senselessness of one man, the haughty Laomedon, who gave Heracles an evil word in return for good treatment, and would not give up the horses for whose sake he had come from far off. But I tell you, what you will win from me here will be death and black destruction, and broken under my spear you will give me glory, and give your soul to Hades of the famed horses. So spoke Sarpedon, while the other lifted his ash spear. Line 6-5-5. Tlepolemus, and in a single moment the long shafts shot from their hands, Sarpedon striking him in the middle of the throat, and the agonizing spear drove clean through, and over his eyes was mantled the covering mist of darkness. But Tlepolemus, in turn, had struck Sarpedon with the long spear in the left thigh, and the spear smashed on through in fury, scraping the bone. But his father fended destruction away from him. But his brilliant companions carried godlike Sarpedon out of the fighting, weighted down as he was by the long spear which dragged. Yet not one of them noticed nor took thought in their urgency to pull it out of his thigh, the ash spear, so he might stand. Such hard work did they have attending him. On the other side, the strong grieved Achaeans carried Tlepolemus out of the fighting. But brilliant Odysseus, who held a hardy spirit, saw what had happened, and his heart within was stirred up. But now he pondered two ways within, in mind and in spirit, whether first to go after the son of Zeus, the loud thundering, or whether he should strip the life from more of the Lycians. Yet, as it was not the destiny of great-hearted Odysseus to kill with sharp bronze the strong son of Zeus, therefore Athena steered his anger against the host of the Lycians. And there he killed Coranus and Chromius and Elastar, Halius and Alcandrus and Prytanis and Noemon. And now might brilliant Odysseus have killed yet more of the Lycians. Line 680. Had not tall Hector of the shining helmet sharply perceived him, who strode out among the champions, helmed in the bright bronze, bringing terror to the Danaans. But Zeus's son, Sarpedon, was glad as he saw him come up, and piteously bespoke him. Son of Priam, do not leave me lying for the Danaans to prey upon, but protect me, since otherwise in your city my life must come to an end, since I could return no longer back to my own house in the land of my fathers, bringing joy to my own beloved wife and my son, still a baby. He spoke, but Hector of the shining helm did not answer, but swept on past him in his eagerness with all speed to push back the Argives and strip the life out of many. Meanwhile, his brilliant companions laid godlike Sarpedon under a lovely spreading oak of Zeus of the Aegis, and strong Pelagon, one of his beloved companions, pushed perforce through and out of his thigh the shaft of the ash spear. And the mist mantled over his eyes, and the life left him. But he got his breath back again, and the blast of the north wind, blowing, brought back to life the spirit, gasped out in agony. But the Argives, under the strength of Ares and bronze-armored Hector, did not ever turn their backs and make for their black ships, line 700, nor yet stand up to them in fighting, but always backward gave way, as they saw how Ares went with the Trojans. Who then was the first, and who the last, that they slaughtered? Hector, Priam's son, and Ares, the brazen, a godlike Teuthras first, and next Orestes, driver of horses, Trechus, the spearman of Aetolia and Onamas, Helenus, son of Oinops, and Oresbius of the Shining Guard, who had lived in Hyle, and much concerned with his property in a place hard on the Cephissian mare, and beside him other men of Boeotia lived and held the fine fertile country. Line 710. Now, as the goddess Hera of the White Arms perceived how the Argives were perishing in the strong encounter, immediately she spoke to Pallas Athena her winged words. For shame now, Atritone, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis. Nothing then meant the word we promised to Menelaus to go home after sacking the strong walled city of Ilion, if we're to let cursed Ares be so furious. Come then, let us rather think of our own stark courage. So Hera is scolding Athena and saying, you forgot we promised the Greeks got to win. So she spoke, nor did the goddess gray-eyed Athena disobey her. But Hera, high goddess, daughter of Cronus, line 720, Cronus the mighty went away to harness the gold-bridled horses. Then Hebe in speed set about the chariot, the curved wheels, eight-spoked and brazen, with an axle of iron both ways. Golden is the wheel's felly imperishable, and outside it is joined, a wonder to look upon, the brazen running rim, and the silver naves revolve on either side of the chariot, whereas the car itself is lashed fast with plating of gold and silver, with double chariot rails that circle about it, and the pole of the chariot is of silver, to whose extremity Hebe made fast the golden and splendid yoke, and fastened the harness, golden and splendid, and underneath the yoke, Hera, furious for hate and battle, led the swift-running horses. So Hera just mounted her chariot. Now in turn, Athena, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis, beside the threshold of her father, slipped off her elaborate dress, which she herself had wrought with her hand's patience, line 735, and now assuming the war tunic of Zeus, who gathers the clouds. So Athena changes her clothes to get ready for battle. She armed in her gear for the dismal fighting, and across her shoulders she threw the betasseled, terrible Aegis, all about which terror hangs like a guard, like a garland, and hatred is there, and battle strength, and heart-freezing onslaught, and thereon is set the head of the grim, gigantic Gorgon, a thing of fear and horror, portent of Zeus of the Aegis. This is the Aegis. It has, Perseus had cut off the Medusa's head, the Gorgon Medusa, and used it against Polydectes, and then he gave it to his protectress, who is the goddess Athena, and she keeps it on her shield. Line 743. Upon her head she set the golden helm, with its four sheets and two horns, wrought with the fighting men of 100 cities. She set her feet in the blazing chariot, and took up a spear, heavy, huge, thick, wherewith she beats down the battalions of fighting men, against whom she of mighty father is angered. Hera laid the lash swiftly on the horses, and moving of themselves groaned the gates of the sky that the hours guarded, those hours to whose charge is given the huge sky and Olympus, to open up the dense darkness, or again to close it. Through the way between, they held the speed of their goaded horses. They found the son of Cronus sitting apart from the other gods upon the highest peak of rugged Olympus. There the goddess of the white arms, Hera, stopping her horses, spoke to Zeus, high son of Cronus, and asked him a question. Father Zeus, are you not angry with Ares for his violent acts, for killing so many, and such good Achaean Greek warriors for no reason, and out of due order to grieve me? And meanwhile, Cypris, it's Aphrodite, and Apollo of the silver bow take their ease and their pleasure, having let loose this maniac who knows nothing of justice. Father Zeus, would you be angry with me if I were to smite Ares with painful strokes and drive him out of the fighting? Then in turn the father of gods and men made answer. Line 765. Go to it then, and set him against him the spoiler Athena, who beyond all others is the one to visit harsh pains upon him. So he spoke, nor did the goddess of the white arms, Hera, disobey, but lashed on the horses, and they winged their way unreluctant through the space between the earth and the starry heaven. As far as into the hazing distance a man can see with his eyes, who sits in his eyrie gazing on the wine-blue water, As far as this is the stride of the gods' proud neighing horses, now as they come to Troy, land, and the two running rivers, where Simois and Scamandrus dash their waters together, there the goddess of the white arms, Hera, stayed her horses, line 775. Slipping them from the chariot and drifting close mist about them, and Simois grew as grass ambrosia for them to graze on. Now these two walked forward in little steps like shivering doves in their eagerness to stand by the men of Argos of Greece, after they had come to the place where the most and the bravest stood close huddled about the great strength of the breaker of horses, Diomedes, in the likeness of lions who rend their meat raw, or wild pigs, boars, in whom the strength diminishes never. There, standing the goddess of the white arms, Hera shouted, likening herself to high-hearted, bronze-voiced Stentor. This, in line 785, is the only mention of Stentor, but this is enough to become proverbial. This becomes an adjective. Look up Stentorian and see what it means. So she likens herself to high-hearted, bronze-voiced Stentor, who could cry out in as great a voice as 50 other men. Shame, you Argives, you Greeks, poor non-entities, you nothings, splendid to look on. In those days when brilliant Achilles came into the fighting, never would the Trojans venture beyond the Dardanian gates, so much did they dread the heavy spear of that man. Now they fight by the hollow ships and far from the city. So she spoke and stirred the spirit and strength in each man. But the goddess grey-eyed Athena made straight for Tydeus's son, Diomedes, and found the king standing by his horses and chariot, cooling the wound that Pandarus made with the cast of his arrow. For the sweat made him sore underneath, and the broad strap of the circled shield, this made him sore, and his arm was tired. He held up the shield strap and wiped the dark blot of blood away from it. The goddess laid hold of the harnessed horses and spoke to him. This is Athena speaking to Diomedes. Tydeus got him a son who's little enough like him, since Tydeus was a small man for stature, but he was a fighter. So Athena is telling Diomedes, you certainly are a wimp compared to your father. Even on that time when I would not consent to his fighting nor drawing men's eyes, when he went by himself without the Achaeans as a messenger to Thebe among the Cadmeans, then I invited him to feast at his ease in their great halls, line 805. Even so, keeping that heart of strength that was always within him, he challenged the young men of the Cadmeans and defeated all of them easily. Such a helper was I who stood then beside him. Now beside you also I stand and ever watch over you and urge you to fight confidently with the Trojans, and yet the weariness has entered your limbs from many encounters, or else it is some poor-spirited fear that holds you. If so, you're no issue then of the son of wise Oeneus Tydeus. Then in answer, powerful Diomedes spoke to her. Line 815. Daughter of Zeus, who holds the Aegis, goddess, I know you, and therefore will speak confidently to you and hide nothing. It is no poor-spirited fear nor shrinking that holds me. Rather, I remember the orders you yourself gave me back in Book 5, at beginning line 129. I remember the orders you yourself gave me when you would not let me fight in the face of the blessed immortals, the rest of them, except only if Aphrodite, Zeus's daughter, went into the fighting. I might stab at her with the sharp bronze. Therefore now have I given myself away, and I ordered the rest of the Argives, the Greeks, all to be gathered in this place beside me, since I see that this who is lord of the fighting is Ares. So Diomedes tells Athenas, you're the one who told me not to fight against Ares. And Athena's telling him she changed her mind. Line 825. Then in turn the goddess, gray-eyed Athena, answered him, son of Tydeus, you who delight my heart, Diomedes, no longer be thus afraid of Ares, nor of any other immortal. Such a helper shall I be, standing beside you. Come then, fight against Ares. Steer your single-footed horses and strike him from close. Be not afraid of violent Ares, that thing of fury, evil rot, that double-faced liar who even now protested to Hera and me, promising that he would fight against the Trojans and stand by the Argives. Now, all promises forgotten, he stands by the Trojans. So speaking, in line 835, she pushed Sthenelus to the ground from the chariot, driving him back with her hand, and he leapt away from it lightly, and she herself, a goddess in her anger, stepped into the chariot beside brilliant Diomedes, and the oaken axle groaned aloud under the weight, carrying a dread goddess and a great man. Pallas Athena then took up the whip and the reins, steering first of all straight on against Ares, the single-foot horses. Ares was in the act of stripping gigantic Periphas, shining son of Acisius, far the best men of the Aetolia. Blood-stained Ares was in the act of stripping him, but Athena put on the helm of death. So what did Athena do? In line 835, she pushed Sthenelus, who was that, Diomedes' driver. She pushes him to the ground, out of the chariot, and she takes over, and now she is Diomedes' chariot driver. That's what she did. In line 845, she puts on the helm of death, that stark Ares might not discern her. Okay, this is the cap of darkness that makes you invisible. Now as manslaughtering Ares caught sight of Diomedes the brilliant, he let gigantic Periphas lie in the place where he had first cut him down and taken the life away from him, and made straight against Diomedes, breaker of horses. Line 850. Now as they in their advance had come close together, Ares lunged first over the yoke and the reins of his horses with the bronze spear, furious to take the life from him. But the goddess, gray-eyed Athena, in her hand catching the spear, pushed it away from the car. So he missed and stabbed vainly. After him, Diomedes, with great war cry, drove forward with the bronze spear, and Pallas Athena, leaning in on it, drove it into the depth of the belly where the war belt girt him. Picking this place, she stabbed, and driving it deep in the fair flesh, wrenched the spear out again. Then Ares, the brazen, bellowed with a sound as great as 9,000 men make, or 10,000, when they cry as they carry into the fighting the fury of the war god. And a shivering seized hold alike on Achaeans and Trojans in their fear at the bellowing of battle-insatiate Ares. As when, and here's another Homeric simile, as when out of the thunderhead the air shows darkening after a day's heat, when the stormy wind uprises, thus to Tydeus' son Diomedes, Ares the brazen, showed as he went up with the clouds into the wide heaven. Lightly he came to the god's citadel, headlong Olympus, and sat down beside Cronian Zeus, grieving in his spirit, then showed him the immortal blood dripping from the spear cut, line 870. So in sorrow for himself he addressed him in winged words, "Father Zeus, are you not angry looking on these acts of violence? We who are gods forever have to endure the most horrible hurts by each other's hatred as we try to give favor to mortals. It's your fault we fight, since you brought forth this maniac daughter accursed, whose mind is fixed forever on unjust action." Who's the maniac daughter? Who's wearing the helmet of invisibility and driving Diomedes' chariot? Athena. "For all the rest, as many as our gods on Olympus are obedient to you, and we all have rendered ourselves submissive, yet you say nothing and you do nothing to check this girl, letting her go free, since you yourself, you begot this child of perdition. See now, the son of Tydeus, Diomedes the haughty, she's egged on to lash out in fury against the immortal gods. First, he stabbed the Cyprian in the arm by the wrist. Then, like something more than human, he swept on even against me. But my swift feet took me out of the way. Otherwise, I should long be lying there in pain among the stark dead men, or go living without strength because of the strokes of the bronze spear." Then, looking at him darkly, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, spoke to him. "Do not sit beside me and whine, you double-faced liar. To me, you're the most hateful of all gods who hold Olympus. Forever quarreling is dear to your heart, wars and battles. Truly the anger of Hera, your mother, is grown out of all hand, nor gives ground. And try as I may, I am broken by her arguments. And it is by her impulse, I think, you are suffering all this. And yet I will not long endure to see you in pain, since you are my child. And it was to me that your mother bore you. But you were born of some other god and proved so... But were you born of some other god and proved so ruinous, long since you would have been dropped beneath the gods of the bright sky. He would have been banished." So he spoke and told Paean to heal him, and scattering medicines to still pain upon him, Paean rendered him well again, since he was not made to be one of the mortals. As when the juice of the fig in white milk rapidly fixes that which was fluid before and curdles quickly for one who stirs it, in such speed as this he healed violent Ares. Line 905. And Hebe washed him clean and put delicate clothing upon him, and rejoicing in the glory of his strength, he sat down beside Cronion. Meanwhile, the two went back again to the house of great Zeus, Hera of Argos, with Athena, who stands by her people, after they stopped the murderous work of manslaughtering Ares. And that is the end of book